Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management, Mellon.com, and by A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years with a commitment to provide objective financial advice. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
All right, so what are we supposed to make of this? We learned this morning the economy grew by almost 4% last quarter. Without much question, that's a good thing. But then the Fed comes out and says something else entirely. I'll give you a little hint about how to think about it. Timing really is everything. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the Candida Sustainability Fund of the Tides Foundation, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet. And by U.S. Trust, Bank of America Private Wealth Management, committed to understanding the values that truly matter to clients and offering a personal approach to managing their wealth.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Ryssdal. Great to have you with us on this Wednesday. It's the 31st of October today. And let's take things in chronological order, mostly because I figure it'll be easier that way. First thing this morning in Washington, the Commerce Department let us in on its A-list economic indicator. Gross domestic product grew at an annual rate of 3.9% in the third quarter. Healthy in any event, downright remarkable when you think about all that's happened in the past couple of months. But then a bit after 2 this afternoon, the Federal Reserve weighed in with its verdict on interest rates, a quarter of a percentage point cut to ward off what it sees as the risk of an economic slowdown, which leaves us with this. Will the economy keep on growing, or is it going to blow a tire? Marketplace's Steve Tripoli has more.
The Fed's not buying today's GDP number as any more than a backward-looking glance at the economy. Its statement about today's rate cut says expansion will likely slow as the housing correction intensifies. Many economists agree. Nigel Galt at Global Insight says the real test lies ahead.
The longer and the deeper the downturn in housing goes, the more likely we are to start to see more spillover, particularly to consumer spending, which has been really fueled over the past few years by the housing boom.
Robert Brusca at Fact and Opinion Economics says consumers are already weakening. He has his own scary Halloween story as evidence.
You really have to be concerned about the fact that department stores are worried enough that they have ramped up advertising for Christmas really about a month ahead of time. I can't ever remember seeing Christmas decorations in the store before Halloween decorations. You know, that's frightening in and of itself.
Neither Brusca nor Galt see a recession ahead, but they do see growth slowing considerably the next few quarters. And Galt says there's no guarantee things won't get worse.
What might upset the apple cart would be if oil prices continue to press higher, if the rest of the world started to show some effects from the credit tightening that we have around the world. The U.S. is very much relying on foreign demand to help keep our growth going while our domestic demand slows.
For now, optimists are pointing at a strong stock market. They say it reflects a positive long-term outlook. But Galt says don't put too much stock in stocks. He says the market can change its mind about the future every bit as fast as the headlines shift. I'm Steve Tripoli for Marketplace.
Picking up a thread Steve teased out for us, oil did a 180 today and spiked more than 4%. Crude's back over $94 a barrel. And on the topic of the housing market and subprimes, Standard & Poor's had some reassuring words today, at least for the big investment houses. The credit rating agency says Wall Street banks ought to come through the whole thing just fine. You've heard of the National Do Not Call list, right? A way to keep telemarketers from breaking up the dinner hour. Today, a coalition of consumer privacy groups pushed for the creation of a national Do Not Track list to stop internet companies from tracking personal behavior online. From Washington, Marketplace's Steve Henn explains.
Right now, online advertisers can record your click stream, monitor your online wish lists, and generally follow you around on the web. and technology's evolving.
It's not your grandmother's cookie.
Leslie Harris runs the Center for Democracy and Technology.
We have features that go way beyond cookies.
Cookies are little bits of code implanted on your computer that track you online. Marketers can combine these and other devices with your name and build personal profiles. Chances are you'll have no idea any of this is going on unless you're the kind of geek who reads the fine print in privacy policies. Harris says right now consumers can opt out of online tracking, but
if you don't know you're being tracked, the likelihood of opting out of being tracked is diminished.
So Harris and others want the FTC to require any company that monitors behavior online to register their network servers. That list of servers would be public, and internet surfers could use it to prevent intrusive online advertisers from gaining access to their computers. Not surprisingly, advertisers hate this idea. Mark Zanis lobbies for the industry.
It's really a solution looking for a problem.
Zanis insists consumers love ads that are tailored to their wants and desires, and he says if they want more privacy online, advertisers will give it to them. AOL announced enhanced privacy options today. To register, all you have to do is put a special cookie on your computer. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Up on Capitol Hill today, the head of NASA promised to release the results of a six-year-long study of airline safety. Michael Griffin has apparently changed his mind because up till now he's declined to let the public see a survey of pilots that reportedly finds there have been many more near collisions between aircraft both in the air and on the ground than we knew about. Our Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale reports.
By some reports, this survey of 24,000 pilots finds near collisions happen twice as often as official statistics. In turning down a Freedom of Information request to release the survey filed last year by the Associated Press, NASA said the results would upset air travelers and threaten airline profits. Today, NASA Administrator Michael Griffin said he didn't write that and doesn't agree with it.
And I regret any impression that NASA was or would in any way try to put commercial interests ahead of public safety.
Griffin says the data will be released as soon as information identifying the participating pilots can be taken out. The pilots were guaranteed anonymity. When the survey comes out near the end of the year, Griffin asked people not to give it too much credence.
It is simply not credible to believe that the aviation community is experiencing nearly four times the number of engine failures that are being documented by the FAA. So I would not want the flying public to believe the data in the form that it appears today.
But Paul Rinaldi with the National Air Traffic Controllers Association says he can believe it.
We have a system that's in a downward spiral at this time. You have less controllers working more airplanes. You know, the system is stretched thin. It's stretched very thin.
NASA's administrator says the survey was completed in 2004, and he can find no compelling reason to continue it. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Investors stumbled just a bit as that Fed rate announcement came out. Then they realized it was good news after all. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Yes, we know it's only Halloween, but we do have some distressing news for you because as far as the nation's biggest retailer is concerned, the holiday shopping season is upon us. Walmart is going to be offering some get 'em while they're hot discounts starting this coming Friday. No, you didn't lose track of time. Usually stores do wait until the day after Thanksgiving to kick off their big sales. It's even got a name, Black Friday, it's called. But Walmart is worried about weak sales growth this Christmas, so it's hoping to get shoppers in the mood even earlier. Here's our senior business correspondent, Bob Moon.
Pardon us while we interrupt your Halloween festivities with the sounds of another season.
Silver bells, silver bells, ring-a-ling.
This is a new kind of Christmas rush to start spending now. Britt Beamer is a retail expert and head of America's research group. He says retailers are getting the idea that it may be now or never.
This year that there's going to be a very tough season when it comes to consumer spending dollars. So being able to get that consumer in early maybe the only time you get a chance to see them, if they spend all their dollars at your store, they may not be going anywhere else for the rest of the season. It could be that tough this year.
Given higher housing costs, energy bills, and other worries, the National Retail Federation's Scott Krugman says this holiday shopping season does carry a special urgency.
If a lot of shoppers are going to be shopping based on price this year, then it's in a retailer's best interest to let it be known that they're going to compete heavily on price sooner rather than later.
Krugman says retailers have stocked up in anticipation of those deep discounts in hopes of making their money on volume. The gamble is whether shoppers will wait things out to see if prices can go even lower.
There's a delicate balance. If retailers don't do as well as they'd hope late in the holiday season and have to resort to unplanned markdowns, that's what really tends to eat into the profit picture, and we don't believe we're going to be there just yet.
Analysts say Walmart's early move puts pressure on its rivals to match prices, and those businesses that haven't planned for that could find themselves left out in the cold this winter. In Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
I'm sure the people who work at the Iowa Department of Revenue are a nice enough bunch, but today they've got a bit of the Grinch who stole Halloween about them. The department ruled back in September that pumpkins are going to be taxable. If Iowans swear they're going to take them home and eat them, they can get a rebate on the sales tax because food's not taxable. But if it's jack-o'-lanterns for carving, you got to pay up. Bob Couch runs a pumpkin patch near Davenport, Iowa. Mr. Couch, how are you?
Hi, great.
Tell me, when people shop for pumpkins at your pumpkin patch, sir, do you typically ask them what they're going to do with it when they get it home?
I never have.
But now the state wants you to, basically.
Well, if I don't want to pay sales tax, they want me to. Because unless they sign a form, the state expects me to pay the appropriate 7% sales tax.
7%. So, in effect now, what the state's done is taken 7% off the top for you, right?
Right. That 7%, it affects me this year from the standpoint I'm going to pay it out of my pocket. Next year,
it
affects the customer.
Yeah.
Well, it goes to the customer. It's really the customer is the loser, not me.
What do you get for a pound of pumpkin?
35 cents a pound. So a 10-pound pumpkin would be $3.50.
Add 7% on top of that, and it's still an affordable luxury, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yes. Of course, my concern, I'm an older person. I did this kind of when I retired. I'm 62 years old. And again, they talk a lot about family values and getting the family together. And again, I'm open 4 weeks. Most pumpkin patches are open about the same amount of time. I don't think, and I'm not politically motivated, but I don't think this is a great source of revenue. There's only, 25-30 growers of pumpkins in the state of Iowa, I would think. I mean, this is 5 weeks.
What do you gross in 4 or 5 weeks of pumpkin selling?
We probably can gross in the range of $15,000 to $18,000, $19,000. But, there's insurance that has to be had for this patch because of the liability with the kids that are going through here. And you have to pay advertisement, and of course, you've got to pay help. So you never know until the middle of November when you calculate up what is actually left.
Now, be honest with me, sir. Do you think people actually buy your pumpkins and go home and make pies out of them, or do they go to the store and get the canned stuff and, do it the easy way?
Well, I don't think it's the state's business to know what people do with pumpkins, bubblegum, cigarettes, or whatever,
Yeah.
And I'm sure some customers will say to me, well, I'm going to buy these to eat, and I will probably certainly not charge them.
I'm shocked that people would not tell the truth about what they're going to do with a pumpkin.
Ha, ha, ha.
Before I let you go, sir, what are you going to be for Halloween tonight? Are you going to dress up?
I dress up for 38 days in my pumpkin hat. So tonight, no, I'm going to take a break.
All righty. Bob Couch runs the Buffalo Pumpkin Patch out near Davenport, Iowa. Mr. Couch, thanks so much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you.
The Fed's interest rate cut this morning may or may not solve the liquidity crisis. We're going to have to let the subprime problems play themselves out before we know. But it is clear the mortgage mess is still reverberating through the economy. So here's a question. Who's to blame? Commentator Robert Reich thinks it's the same people who cashed in before the credit bubble burst.
If you were to look at the highest paid one-half of 1% of Americans, whom do you imagine you'd find? Well, according to a study by University of Chicago professors Stephen Kaplan and Joshua Rao, the fact is you'd find more than twice as many Wall Street financiers as corporate executives. So why are people at the top of the financial economy doing so much better than those in the real economy? If you believe pay is a measure of someone's economic value, you might think Wall Street's top brass contributes more to the economy. I mean, consider the inventiveness and daring required to create collateralized debt obligations, structured credit derivatives, and all the other financial innovations over the last few years, some of which, although no one seems to know how much of which, have rested on subprime loans. But you might want to think again. Last week, Merrill Lynch stunned investors by announcing a $7.9 billion write-down of bonds backed by subprime mortgages, billions more than the company had forecast earlier this month. Then Merrill's top guy, Stanley O'Neill, was sacked. But don't cry for him. He'll get a severance payment even bigger than most real economy CEOs get when they're forced to step down. And other Wall Street heads may be on the chopping block soon. Despite all the hype about each big bank having its own expertise, they've all used similar techniques of highly leveraged and largely unaccountable speculation, which means their balance sheets are likely to have similar credibility problems, with their fiscal years ending in November and their auditors requiring that assets reflect market realities. Other firms will certainly face other big write-downs. In other words, there's no reason to believe Wall Street executives have been contributing more than executives in the real economy. They've been paid more because they devise schemes that only appear to create value until they unravel.
Robert Reich was Secretary of Labor during the first Clinton administration. He's a professor of public policy at Berkeley now. His latest book is called Supercapitalism. We'd love to hear your comments. Go to marketplace.org. Click on that link that says Contact. Coming up, Harley riders are proud to be rebels.
People will pay anything, basically, to continue that or just to break from the norm.
Even in death, it turns out. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials climbed 1% or 137 points today to close at 13,930. The NASDAQ rocketed 1.5% higher, 42 points. Closed at 2859. The S&P 500 rose more than 1%, 18 points, to end the day at 1549. Newmont Mining sparkled today. The gold producer rushed to a 9.5% gain. Shares in Google gained 1.75% to cross the $700 a share threshold. Oil company Hess bubbled up more than 4% after oil prices closed back in on $95 a barrel. Markets overseas were generally up. Back home, bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 4.47%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, managing money since 1937 with a focus on consistent results over the long term. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. And by the American Public Transportation Association, committed to an energy-independent America by increased use of public transportation at publictransportation.org. And by U.S. Trust, Bank of America Private Wealth Management, committed to understanding the values that truly matter to clients and offering a personal approach to managing their wealth. Want to know what's in the works at Marketplace? How about getting the latest news and features in an email? Sign up for the Marketplace Midday Update. It will keep you up to date on the day's business news and let you know what to expect on our next program. Go to marketplace.org and click on the newsletter link on the right.
From the Marketplace Statebook, here are events for Thursday, November 1st. The new director of the International Monetary Fund takes up his post. Dominique Strauss-Kahn is a former French finance minister. The American Film Institute's annual festival gets underway in Los Angeles. And on this day in history, 1993, the Maastricht Treaty was enacted, creating the European Union. I'm Alex Schmidt.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. The country's top alternative energy lab had something to say today about the latest in eco-friendly fuels. The National Renewable Energy Laboratory in Golden, Colorado is going to restart its research into algae. Power from pond scum, in the vernacular. It's a program the Department of Energy dropped back in the 1990s when oil was a whole lot cheaper. And, in fact, the lab's going to team up with Chevron for this project. From our sustainability desk, Michael Montgomery of American Radio Works reports.
Al Darzens is a senior scientist at the National Renewable Energy Laboratory. The Energy Department's gleaming lab near Denver has lots of new toys for him. Darzens is inspecting millions of dollars of new generation biotech tools. They help scientists alter algae to produce twice its body weight in oil, oil that can power almost anything. He says the potential is vast.
And so you can take this oil and you can actually make a biodiesel out of it. You can produce green diesel or green gasoline from the oil as well.
Plenty of plants like olives produce oil, but the lab is boosting algae's capacity to make a fuel-friendly oil. The idea isn't new, but the economics are. Government researchers tested algae as one solution to the energy crisis of the 1970s. But when the price of crude oil sank in the early 90s, that stopped the work. Now with oil prices soaring, everyone from Boeing and Virgin Airlines to the federal government are investing big time. And that includes the Pentagon. And for good reason. Douglas Kirkpatrick is a program officer with DARPA, the Pentagon's research wing.
The DOD is the single largest energy consumer in a country that is the single largest energy consumer in the world.
The Pentagon devours as much oil as a mid-sized country like Greece imports. That means every time the price of a barrel rises a dollar, it adds as much as $120 million to the Pentagon's annual budget. That's why the Pentagon and the Department of Energy are funding several private companies to produce affordable fuels from algae and other plants.
There's a lot of recognition that the reasons that this was not viable 10 or 15 or 20 years ago, that those reasons are now null and void.
Douglas Kirkpatrick says there's another military priority, giving troops a way to make infinitely sustainable fuel near the battlefield. Kirkpatrick says mobile systems would give troops tactical energy independence. And it's not just the military that's interested. John Sheehan recently left a 17-year career at the government's energy lab to join Live Fuels, a Silicon Valley startup that bills itself as a mini Manhattan project.
The pace of development work for algae is explosive right now. Not only do you have, you know, almost a new company a day looking at this issue, but a tremendous amount of private sector capital is moving its way in.
Sheehan says algae's big draw is that it can literally grow in wastelands, so it doesn't need to take up scarce resources like farmland or fresh water to flourish.
These algae will grow where other plants will not grow.
So you eliminate the food versus fuel argument that's plaguing the ethanol industry. Matt Kaspari heads Aurora Biofuels. He says it all boils down to economics.
You can get the oil out of the algae. You can run it in engines. People have shown that, have demonstrated it. It's not theoretical. It's a cost question. How cheaply can you do it?
There are more technical obstacles and concerns about using genetically modified algae. Still, in many ways, the future is here. The Pentagon's Douglas Kirkpatrick.
We are within striking range at DARPA of producing a fully qualifiable jet fuel, not a blend, from biological feedstocks, from plant feedstocks, and ultimately perhaps from aquacultural feedstocks. It's not fantasy, it's reality.
In San Francisco, I'm Michael Montgomery from Marketplace and American Radio Works.
Elvis is dead, but boy, can he still sell. The King leads the Forbes list of top-earning dead celebrities. $49 million in Presley-related sales the past 12 months. John Lennon and Charles M. Schulz from Peanuts came in at numbers 2 and 3. But even their combined total is dwarfed by a related industry. Funerals are a $20 billion a year business. It's recession-proof, and pretty much all of us could be described as potential customers. But funeral directors still do have to be on the cutting edge to stay competitive. Carl Marziali explains.
In the funeral business, somber and dignified never go out of style. But some forward-thinking undertakers are making noise with a new take on the classics. That would be a hearse, a hog hearse, specifically a Harley-Davidson Road King with 88 cubic inches of casket hauling power. It's a big novelty in an industry known more for tradition. Jack Feather was managing a construction company when he took a road trip on his Harley to Tombstone, Arizona. And that's where he came face to face with a horse-drawn hearse that carried Billy Clanton after the shootout at the OK Corral.
Looking at that, just the idea popped in, well, what if you took the horses away and, you know, put a Harley under it and did it for biker funerals?
So Feather quit his job and founded the Tombstone Hearse Company. He says he knew it would work.
Because there's about 10 million motorcycle enthusiasts out there, it's a completely untapped market, and the loyalty to the lifestyle is there. And people will pay anything, basically, to continue that or just to break from the norm.
From its base in Pennsylvania, Tombstone has sold a total of 18 hearses since 2003, sticker price $80,000. Smelling Opportunity, a Florida-based competitor, has also jumped in. Both companies convert the hog to a trike and hitch it to a closed trailer with glass sides. Dress code for the chauffeur is formal Harley. Black jeans, black boots, white shirt, black leather vest, and the classic Super Bowl helmet.
I thought it was beautiful.
Joanne Meyer first saw the Harley hearse at Michigan Memorial Park near Detroit. For someone who rode dirt bikes and married another biker, it was irresistible. She's booked a passage on the hearse for herself, her deceased husband, and the rest of their household.
I'll be cremated. I'll be put in the urn. My dogs will be with us. So it'll be my husband and I and the two dogs in the urn and our last motorcycle ride.
It may be the first ride for other customers. Feather and other funeral directors say the Harley hearse also appeals to vets and their families and to all kinds of people who've never straddled a hog.
Our market isn't just to the bikers. It's for anybody looking for something unique and very classy.
All of this horrifies Charlotte Hayes, co-author of the etiquette book, Being Dead is No Excuse, the official Southern Lady's Guide to Hosting the Perfect Funeral.
No, I think the Harley hog is not good taste. I suppose if you rode a motorcycle in life and you absolutely want it, maybe that's okay. But the procession of cars behind the hearse with the light on in the front car, I think that's just the epitome of dignity. And the other thing about a funeral is it's not the time you want to be creative.
Others might say it's not the time to be boring. It's an argument that may never be settled. But just to help you decide, here's that Harley hearse one more time. In Los Angeles, I'm Carl Marziali for Marketplace.
We've got pictures of some of those hearses on our website. It's marketplace.org.
Marketplace is supported by Shriners Hospitals for Children, providing treatment for orthopedic, burn, and spinal cord injuries at no cost to the families. More at ShrinersForKids.org. And by Putnam Investments, where a diversified approach to fixed income can strengthen your portfolio. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication.
This final note today, It's a Small World has made visitors to Disneyland smile for decades. And really, what's not to love? Colorful figures, cheerful kids, a song you can't really ever get out of your head. But for some time now, there's been a dark side brewing to that ride, or sinking, perhaps more appropriately. Since It's a Small World opened in 1963, Americans have been getting heavier. The boats were originally designed to carry 175-pound male and 135-pound female on average, but we're heavier now than we were 45 years ago. Backups from boats bottoming out have gotten so bad that come January, Disney's going to shut down the ride for a year for a redesign and an overhaul. True confessions time, I never really did like that ride. Anyway, that's Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow shot up 137 points, 1% as the Fed cut short-term interest rates. The NASDAQ put on 42 points, 1.5%. The S&P 500 surged 18 points, nearly 1% there. Ravi Karman, Stephen Colon, Nicole Imbornoni, Eric Johnson, and Aaron Scott engineered the program for us. Coming up next time, one booming economy, one in peril. What to do?
China does feel the best solution for Burma is precisely the solution that was developed in China itself. That is, concede as little as possible on the political front and grow the economy underneath the authoritarian regime.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.